Welcome to JW Podcast, the Watchtower Jenga of podcasts that takes down the organisation one brick at a time.
Hello, welcome to JW Podcast. We've got Steve with us today. Hi, Steve. Hiya. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Got a bit of a cold, but I'm fine.
Yes, you have, haven't you? Anything interesting happened to you since we last spoke?
Oh, my goodness. Yes.
Oh, good.
Well, I was promoted to senior teacher position, but my two line managers now have left. So basically, I'm running the company on my own. It's really stressful. Yeah.
Wow.
That's amazing.
Has your pay gone up?
Not yet.
Oh,
but the handy. CEO of the company has promised that it will do sometime, but I don't know when.
Can you let me know when? Because then it'll be really worth me flirting with you. I'm not going to waste my breath if you're still on your old income. So are you coping with the stress?
Not very well, actually.
Okay.
Oh dear, I've just come down with a cold, I've been ill all the time, just I'll get used to it though, it's just because it's a new experience for me, yeah.
it's a steep learning curve,
yes,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, well done on that, on the impending promotion. And I've got Heather with me as well. Hi Heather.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Tell me about what exciting thing has happened to you.
Oh, not a lot really, but well, I did go on safari to Africa.
Oh yeah.
Went on a 2-week luxury resort, you know, just a spa and all that kind of thing. And a 3-day safari, so that was lovely.
Oh.
And I just got back on Wednesday.
Whereabouts in Africa?
Tanzania.
Oh, yeah, I'm liking that tattoo.
That's me henna.
Isn't that black henna supposed to kill you?
Well, it hasn't done so far. I'm hoping it doesn't.
Okay, no, that's good.
Yeah. I paid £5 for that.
Did you? In Africa?
Yeah. For death.
Wow.
Yeah.
Was it cool? You saw a giraffe giving birth, didn't
saw
you?
Saw a giraffe giving birth, yeah. We saw hippos mating.
Oh!
They're proper at it.
Animals, it's all sex and death.
The pregnant hyena eating an impala. Yes, it's all sex and death. It was very good. It was the most incredible experience I've ever had, ever.
Oh, that's amazing.
Lovely. Yeah.
I'm going to tell you about the most incredible experience I had last week. So, you know, I've started working in a Catholic school.
Oh.
We had Mass on Thursday. I went to my first ever Mass.
Oh, you've never been? Of course you have. No.
Never done Mass. It was awesome. I was like a hand flapping simpleton.
Wow.
I was like this. I was singing the songs.
Oh.
And it was ace. The only bit I couldn't do was the bit where they say something like, oh, God is very amazing, and you've got to say it back, like, God is very amazing. You just keep repeating it, and it got a bit boring, that bit. But songs, because it was a school.
Yeah.
So we did a lot of songs, and all the kids had tambourines and things. It was really nice.
Yeah,
it was genuinely nice. And the really nice bit about it was, like, Canon Tom, who came and delivered Mass, he was talking about us being a family in the school, and I work at a school for disabled children, so it's physically and mentally, so it's quite touching. And we had 6 readings, and only 2 of our children can speak. So one of them who could speak did a reading, and it took him a long time, and I was nearly crying.
Oh.
And then the other children who can't speak, how they did their readings was, we have these switch buttons, so you like press a button and somebody's recorded the speech, so the child presses the button and that's the reading. And then another boy had, you know, like those talking devices where you type in and it says it in an electronic voice.
Stephen Hawking type.
Exactly. Yeah. So one of our boys is sufficiently cognitively able that he can put sentences together.
Yeah.
So he put his reading together in his speaking device, and his Stephen Hawking voice did the honest to God, I was nearly crying. It was really moving.
Oh, that sounds brilliant.
It was really nice. So there were nice bits to it, and then there were bullshit bits to it. You know, the God stuff was bullshit, and all the stuff about, and the boy that did the reading in his own voice said his reading was about, we're all given gifts, and whatever gift you're given, you should use it to help others. And oh my God, I was nearly crying.
Oh,
so
that is really touching.
It was touching. So I said to my mum, who's also more or less an atheist now, oh, come to the next Mass we have. You love it.
Just invite everybody.
Yeah,
proselytizing there, Louise.
No, so I'm all conflicted now. No, I'm not.
I've turned to God now.
Yeah, no, don't worry. Oh, that bit was really proper boring. Anyway, moving swiftly on from our exciting lives, we have an amazing person to interview today. I'm so grateful that you've come along. Christopher is the foster child.
Yeah, we can
Was
say
it a
that.
private fostering?
It's a long story.
Yes. Well, hopefully we're going to hear it. Yeah. The foster child, you could say, of the woman that's been branded the most evil mother in England, also happened to be a Jehovah's Witness. So, Christopher Spry, thank you so much for letting us speak to you today.
Thank you for having me on.
Oh, it's just going to be really interesting. So, please.
Yeah, don't big it up at all.
No, well, I'm grateful because I bought a book about your story, and I couldn't bring myself to read it. And I thought, given that I couldn't read it, I don't know how you lived it.
So I think the best thing to do then, Chris, is start with a bit of a backstory. If you could just fill us in.
Yeah.
I know it's a really complex and it's been a long time now, so there's going to be loads. But if you just, give us a brief, if you like, of
Okay,
what
what's the best way to? I'm trying to remember my life now.
Okay,
There
so you like so what? So where? Were, so you were born to parents in Cheltenham. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Shall I just do a very brief
Yeah,
backstory? Okay.
Do it as long as you like.
Cool. Could be here a while.
Oh, that's fine.
Page one.
Yeah.
Okay, so my story is basically I was born to substance misuse parents in Cheltenham. They put me up for a private foster arrangement, and I was fostered by Eunice Spry, who now has a bit more of a reputation. At first, everything was okay. We lived quite a normal lifestyle. She was always a bit wacky, but quite a normal lifestyle. And then it became very, very abusive. And all this time, of course, we were in the Jehovah's Witnesses as well. But it became horrifically abusive just overnight, just
Really?
like a switch. It just
How old were you?
so the abuse started about 3.5 years old, and overnight went to very serious levels. Broken foot, broken bone straight away.
And this wasn't just you, was it? At that point, there were other siblings in the
No, so I
house.
had fellow siblings, had a younger brother, elder sister, or two elder sisters, and there was another girl that lived there as well. And but the abuse only happened to three of us,
Yeah.
so which makes it even more confusing now. We're trying to think back on it, but this went on all for many years. Over that time, the abuse got worse and worse and worse. Went unnoticed by the local authorities, and ended up in 2006, 2007, when the police decided to do raids after one of my siblings had, I say spilt the story, that sounds harsh, but one of my siblings decided to tell her story, and the
Got involved.
police got involved.
So my understanding of it is that Victoria, your elder sister, went to she's found Jehovah's Witness friends because you're a
Yeah.
Jehovah's Witness race of
We were Jehovah's
Jehovah's Witness,
Witnesses, yeah.
and she went to the congregation and said, "This is what's happening. We
Yes.
need help."
Yeah.
And had she left the home by that point?
She had not left the home, no.
Right.
So my other sister had left the
Right.
home, Aloma had left the home, and we didn't know anything about her after that.
Okay.
Victoria, I think, was under a lot of pressure. I was living actually with Eunice's parents when this all kicked off. I was there living in Kerber, but Victoria,
And how old were you at that point?
I was 15, 16, so, and Victoria would have been probably 18, 18, 19. She went through one of the kingdom halls with a lot of injuries on her face, I believe, and I don't know quite the whole story because I wasn't around,
Because you
but
weren't there, yeah.
yeah, I've heard her side of it. And one of the Jehovah's Witnesses started questioning it, and I know other Jehovah's Witnesses didn't believe it, but she's told her story, and one of the Jehovah's Witnesses decided to call the police on it.
So, from the age of 3.5, you were going to meetings from three childhood, you were
So
going to
we
meetings.
weren't ever reliably going to meetings.
Right, yeah.
We were
On and off.
under the teachings of Jehovah's Witnesses the whole time. I read the Bible at the back of my hand by the age of five, and very weirdly, I knew the songbook as well. Could never sing it properly though. But yes, we would go to select meetings if we were badly scarred or damaging. There was one point in the abuse that we were being starved, and Victoria and I probably went through about 2 months without eating hardly anything. I know we went a good 14 days once with just one slice of bread. So at that point, she couldn't take us to the church because
it would visibly look bad.
But we did go to meetings, you know, covered in bruises. I remember I had a laceration over my right eye the one time, and marks all down my arm, which had been from, she'd got a hot poke from a cooker and just gone down the arm. And I've still got little marks there. But they just went down the arm. And, you know, this was a visibly infected wound and no battered eyelid.
I suppose to a degree, you kind of look on and think, oh, boys will be boys, or kids will be kids.
There must be some injuries that are clearly not boys will be boys.
Yeah.
Scabby knees, that's boys, isn't it? But insides of arms, that's not falling over, is it?
No. And it was when all, you know, the three, we call ourselves the three abused. The three abused arrived and were covered in injuries, you know.
Yeah.
I look back now as an adult, I was about to say a parent. I'm not.
As a grown up.
I look back now and it's, you know, there must have been signs. Yeah.
Somebody must have. I'd like to think when you go to Kingdom Hall and you know everybody, you do know people really well, don't you? You'd like to think if there were children turning up with regular injuries
were they regular injuries or was it just were they sporadic?
We were always injured sometimes.
Visibly,
because we've been beaten daily. So,
but am I right in thinking that she beat you on the bottom of your feet so that it wouldn't bruise and show?
I don't know about my siblings, but the main beatings for me, I think I took more of the physical stuff.
Yeah,
but the main beatings for me were on the soles of my feet. And I've just done a run today. I can still feel the injuries on my feet. It's ridiculous. So the damage has been done, but visibly, you know, you've got shoes on, it's not going to show. It was the police afterwards who said that was, you know, beyond sadistic. It was calculated.
Yeah, I mean, it's worth mentioning that the abuse that she, as a social worker in safeguarding, I see cases of abuse. I don't see the abuse itself, but I hear and I work cases of abuse, and this is by far and away the most physical,
it's the most graphic I've ever read read some horrific stuff. I mean, there was the Fritzl case, wasn't there? This was equally as distressing to read as that. There's nothing that I've read that was worse than what that woman did.
It was power driven from what I've read. I mean, I've only read Chris's book and Aloma's book. I haven't read Victoria's, but for the same reason, I couldn't read it. Because I'd already read and I knew Chris by then. I thought, I can't read it.
Yeah.
The abuse, I mean, things like making you drink bleach and feces.
Absolutely.
And that's power, isn't it? That's a power and control thing.
As the effect of that wore off, we were less shocked by it. It would have to be up to the next, as you say, power level almost.
And is that what she did? Did she keep ramping it up?
Towards the end, I'd say the worst abuse for me was about 12, 13 years old. Oh. You know, it was another level compared to what it had been.
And did she use the Bible was the Bible all interlaced? Were you being, had an evil beaten out of you or something?
Pretty much spot on what you said. It was we were demons and she would quite happily tell us. And we didn't, I can't speak for my siblings. Towards the later years, I didn't believe it. But when you're 5, 6, 7 and you're kept up at 3 a.m. watching horror movies because she says that's what you are. And, you know, I don't know if anyone knows it, the Freddy Krueger series. Yeah, I watched that at like 5. And, you know, she's like, that's what you are. And, you know, you start believing it. You really do think you're the devil's children. And, you know,
I think it wasn't, you know, whereas we would say or something, she could fall back on it was discipline. There wasn't, from what I've read, any trigger for it, so you know you couldn't do anything right. You're being told, well, you're bad, but then you're even doing good things and nothing bad, and you're still being told you're bad.
Yeah, and we generally loved this woman at the time. You know,
it was your mum, wasn't it?
Exactly, and you know, still conflicting feelings on that. You know,
yeah.
I don't know, I'm 27 now, quite old. and there's still conflicting feelings on that now, you know, but we wanted to please her. You know, we worked out to actively do things wrong.
Mm.
And as you said, yeah, actively, whatever we did,
Wasn't good enough. Any guilt with it? Did she ever say, "Oh, you're not doing it good enough for me"? You know, you need to.
It wasn't especially for her. It was in the eyes of God. We weren't doing it good enough for him. And you know, there was the old. I said the old chestnut. That sounds terrible, but you know, we won't go to heaven. We won't.
Yeah.
Go to the other side, as she called it.
You show her up, would you? You'd be showing her up at meetings and
absolutely.
Things,
and we weren't allowed to ever talk to anyone else at the meetings.
Mm.
Whereas, you know, a lot of, you know, the meetings are what they are. But actually, all the young people do get together.
Yeah, they do, yeah.
There's that one corner of the Kingdom Hall. And
yeah, where you go and chat.
We weren't allowed that at all. And any adults who came to us were always told that we were being punished and couldn't talk to us, which I guess stopped us ever messing up as such. But...
Was it this Kingdom Hall?
Chooksbury Kingdom Hall.
So it must be quite hard for you to come to my house. Just want everyone to know I live pretty much opposite the Kingdom Hall.
It's
just there.
It's a bit weird. I came to Chooksbury with some friends the other day and they were all coming out of the church and it was just like fight or flight almost. It was,
Are they just same people that you knew when you were
a lot of them are still there, some of them, this has been, you know, a deeply embarrassing thing that this has gone in their congregation.
Yeah.
And they will, if you meet them in the street, they won't cross the street. They will come up and say, hello, how are you doing?
Yeah.
And some of them are very friendly. But the others who just walk the road won't even look you in the eye. You know, we are the one who ruined the conversation.
The congregation.
The congregation.
But so you haven't been disassociated? Disfellowshipped? You drift.
I kind of drifted, and then there was one point that all contact got cut.
Right.
There was a thing called MySpace back when this started, and everything was deleted overnight.
Okay.
So it was almost as if something had been said and all contact.
And what happened with her, with the congregation?
So she got disfellowshipped.
Right.
I actually found this out more recently. And then more recently has been accepted back in.
No.
Yeah, she's attending a church in Wolverhampton.
Shut the front door.
So.
And she's a Jehovah's Witness again.
Yeah, absolutely.
She's repented, has she? Is that what you... Do you have to repent? What's the deal?
I don't know the ins and outs, but I have friends up that way who have actively seen her going in and out of the Kingdom Halls. And,
oh, my God.
Yeah, this is someone who's on, you know, the sexual register, who's on...
How can that be? I mean, did you have to go out on field service, or was the sporadicness?
No. So towards the later years in our teens, we did go out on field service and things, but we were very limited to who we could go with.
Yeah, because if you weren't allowed to mix with anyone, and obviously there's always the danger that if you were alone with another person, you might say things.
But in the early days, we actually thought that every Jehovah's Witness went through this. Yeah, and I know, you know, there is discipline within Jehovah's Witnesses. You know, they are, they're not scared to smack their children. But there's extremes of it. But we thought every child had this. You know, we just thought we were very naughty and we deserved it. So towards the later years, when actually we were questioning things more, the field service stopped quite quickly.
Right. It was too dangerous to let you speak to anyone, I would have thought.
Pretty much.
Yeah, well, school stopped, didn't it?
I was going to ask about school,
Well, I've done about 3 days education in my whole life.
Really?
So I went to Ash Church School for 3 days, and I can't remember the exact lines. A teacher actually got in contact with me more recently.
Said
I'd asked for food.
Oh.
Yeah,
and this is, of course, because I didn't arrive with a lunchbox or anything. I'd asked for food, and this got reported back to Eunice and pulled out. I know something similar happened to my siblings as well. So
that's terrible, because speaking from a school safeguarding point of view, now, if a child asks for food, that should be reported to the safeguarding officer in the school, not to the parents.
Well,
because that's just going straight back to the possibly the abuser, isn't it?
Yeah,
exactly. There was something that came from this, and I'm going to get it all wrong because you know I'm researched or prepared. But there was an issue with the way that Chris and his siblings,
the three abused,
that they were fostered, and it wasn't.
Right.
It was a private fostering arrangement, which is separate to
social
being. Yeah, so you know, choosing getting a child through the social services. So it was a private fostering, and then I think did she go on to foster you, or she was because she wouldn't have passed a fostering assessment.
No,
with the house the way it was, and things.
But from five onwards, I think the records show that we were fostered.
You were fostered, yeah.
So we don't know how that.
Worked.
And the paperwork is lost and no one knows what happened.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
There was a serious case review afterwards and it's just like, we don't know what happened.
It sounds like you obviously fell through every gap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now?
I was just going to ask, did she register you as home educated? I mean, how did she get away with not sending you to school? Or
So the home educated thing, you've hit right on it. We were home educated from that point on.
Yeah.
And the home education did the, I think it was a yearly check at that point. And they were shown the same work for 6 years, which we hadn't done. Eunice had done it ourselves because we weren't being taught at all at home. Yeah, my sister helped me learn to read and write, so we have no formal education at all. But yes, home education really failed on that.
You know Mark and Cora? Cora was home educated and they told me that a lot of Jehovah's Witnesses in this area, in this Cheltenham area, are home educated now. And as a teacher, I feel really strongly, before I even knew that Witnesses were pulling that stunt, I had a friend who wasn't a Witness, but he pulled his child out of secondary school because he was being bullied, which I get. And he asked me to maths tutor this child, and this child would run away every time I went to maths tutor him. That child, I know for a fact, sat and watched The Simpsons for 6 months straight and was never checked on by the LEA. Mm. All you do is write a letter to the school and say they've been home educated, and then the gaps after that are horrific. And what you said about them being shown the same work for 6 years is disgusting.
Yeah.
And I know there are Jehovah's Witnesses that believe in home education for various reasons. I am so strongly against it because it's mostly used for a cover for abuse.
Yeah.
Not always, I get that, but in my experience, mostly.
It rings my alarm bells. As soon as I get a case and it says home educated, I go, why?
Yeah, why? What are you keeping them from?
Yeah. What would you gain from that? Yeah. You're either religious or there's something going on.
Yeah. I think there's some recent figures coming out at the moment, which is 40% of home educated cases that have been investigated are abusive.
Yeah, because it's the classic way to keep them away from all that safeguarding that's been put in because of these serious case reviews in schools. Now, you know, teachers can be sacked for not spotting things now, which is right, and so can social workers, can't they? And that's right. But people know how to get around that. They, you know, smear the faces with chocolate.
Yeah.
How stupid can you be not to spot this?
But it's like anything, isn't it? It's trial and error, I suppose. It comes from learning. It's evidence-based practice. Mm. And one thing that came out of, or has happened since the Spry case, was the Reg 24 regulations that came, the private fostering regulations that are now in place. So that if anybody is privately fostered, there's a whole series of regulations. The social workers have to go in and sort of, assessments need to be done. If they don't pass the assessment, it can't go ahead. That kind of thing. So it's not just a case of palming your kids off on somebody else now. There's a whole system in place. So that's one thing. But you should have had social workers going in. If you were fostered, you should have had...
You should have had the LEA
going in. Yeah.
Properly checking, not just looking at a bit of work that somebody's mum had done.
Yeah, exactly. These kids aren't being seen by anybody. No professional's eyes are on these children.
Yeah.
Because social workers did get called. Our cases were reported to social services quite a few times. And reported to the church as well, I'll add, by more open-eyed people.
Mm.
And just excuses were made, we're not available on holiday and things. And it just eventually just fell through. But I have to say as well, Eunice was amazingly good at manipulating people.
Mm.
And while, yes, there were failures from social services, there were failures from the Jehovah's Witnesses and police, hospitals, and the amount of times I went to hospitals and I fell down the stairs I cut every piece of my body.
I've been in hospital last night with my daughter, and within an hour of being there, I was asked, have you got a social worker? Have you, you know, all a series of questions. I could easily have said no. Yeah. Which I did say no, because I haven't. But, you know, if I...
I am a social worker.
That's exactly what I said. Do you have any contact with social workers? I said, yeah. Loads every day. Yeah.
They give me that look for a moment.
Yeah, she did. She, you're not impressing anyone. But, yeah, so, you know, but they're not... They don't check. And it's only if they get a suspicion, which they're quite good at, nurses, I will say. You know, they get a suspicion of DV or, you know, this is a non-accidental injury. Especially in children, they will now check for non-accidental, if it's a non-accidental.
All schools have training in looking out for non-accidental injuries. Yeah, we're told where to look, what to look for. We're told in mainstream schools where you're not as close to children, and the PE teachers are asked to keep an eye out when children are getting changed. Injuries on arms and legs.
And quite a few cases do come through from schools now. From quite a few I've seen, actually, from nurses.
Really?
Who are based at the school will just spot something that's not school quite right. And school nurses are an amazing thing.
Yeah, definitely. But you're still getting, you know, your Daniel Pelkers through and things like, you know, the other children that are still not being spotted.
People are still falling through the net.
They are, yeah. But I must say, in the 10 years since this? Since
you came... the main part of it, a lot has changed.
A lot has changed, but it's not enough. It's certainly not enough. But what I was interested in, Chris, was sort of your feelings on the Jehovah's Witnesses. And at the time, I mean, it's very easy retrospectively to look back and say, you know, they didn't do anything or whatever. You were presented to them in a very nice, well-presented way, very clean and tidy and things. And behind the scenes, they weren't come into the house, so they didn't know what the house was like or anything like that. What were your feelings for them at the time, and what are your feelings for them now?
It's a difficult one. Our sort of feelings now, we'll go in reverse. Because, well, more recently, when I was living in the centre of Cheltenham, I had letters put through my postbox by the Cheltenham, I don't know if it's Cheltenham or Gloucester Jehovah's Witnesses, saying that I should forgive Eunice. I've got copies of these letters, and it got to the point that I was having a watchtower dropped through my door every day.
Seriously?
With little notes attached, it's time to forgive, it's time to forget. Make use of your life was the one.
I would love to,
but my life's been ruined. Thank you. So
you've done more living in the last 10 years than you've done previously.
Absolutely. So, you know, that my thoughts on them now have changed more recently. And the amount of pressure I've had to do, as Mark and Corey, as you mentioned earlier, actually drew up proper letters for me, and we got them legally checked to and were delivered to the Kingdom Halls in the area, saying, do not make contact.
Really?
Good. This contact is not needed and really not wanted.
I can't. That's horrific. But
they would ring the door, I'd come on out, and I've got to be honest, I'm too polite most of the time. Yeah. But by the end of it, I was nearly throwing the telephone at the head from the window, but it got a bit too much. So, you know, is it time to forgive and forget? That's another story. But at the time, you know,
but who are they asking you to forgive? Eunice or them? Or God? Or
I don't... the first letter was Eunice.
Right.
Eunice has come back to us. I think the words were, Eunice has come back to us, why don't you? It's time to forgive. And this was on a proper little note drawn up, stuck to a watchtower. Made for some really, really good fire. Fire starting paper that evening.
Honestly.
But... So my thoughts on them, you know, more recently, this happened in the last year, and you know, it was like, you guys are having a laugh, this is
mental.
Yeah, and it wasn't just one lady, you know, one lady or one brother, the terms now. use the terms, why not? It wasn't one lady or one bloke coming, there were different people, so it was almost a targeted effort to get me to forgive. So, and I've never made, I haven't, this the Jehovah's Witnesses. I haven't actively gone out to do that.
Unlike me, who's actively gone out to...
We've seen the videos. We've seen the videos.
She's forceful.
So my thoughts at the time...
Was it just something you did? Was it just like...
It was just something we did, And for a little bit after the arrests, we carried on doing it, my younger brother and
really?
I.
Really?
So a taxi picked us up from the foster home and took us there.
Oh.
And we weren't allowed to sit with anyone else. So
that for confidentiality reasons, or just
I don't know. It was all very weird. It was all very weird, and we went twice a week—the Thursday one here and the Sunday one. And in the end, I got to the point I thought it was all BS.
Yeah.
My brother was still. I won't say heavily under the influence, but it almost is that. Yeah, it is an influence. And they were...
Because he would have been, what, 13?
12, 13. Well, but at this point, he couldn't even tie his own shoelaces.
No.
So he was, you know, he was kept as a baby this whole time. So for him, I think there was a need there, but eventually we stopped going.
She was a cult within a cult, wasn't she?
Almost, yeah. She was.
She was controlling on top of the controlling organisation that you already had.
The way I look at it, almost, she was an extreme version of the Jehovah's Witnesses.
Yeah.
And
ultra extreme.
But within the Jehovah's Witnesses, there is a culture of, you know, don't challenge things. Mm-hmm. Everything's just...
Don't rock the boat.
Don't rock the boat. Mm-hmm. You know, they are the favourite people of the congregation. Eunice was one of those. Anything that was said just got...
Really? Now that's interesting. Because I've seen the pictures of her with a face with a dog's bottom. And I
Common of the day. Common of the day.
And I just imagine her like the kind of the batty old woman of the congregation that people...
In some ways she was, but her parents were very well respected within... So they'd been in the faith since, well, late World War II, probably.
I wonder what the hell they'd done to her to make her so evil.
So I lived with them for probably a year towards the end of the abuse years.
Yeah.
And they were very strict Jehovah's Witnesses, but they weren't bad people.
Right.
They really weren't. And, you know, when this all came out, they really didn't want to believe it, of course, because this is their sweet daughter.
Mm.
But I think they must have woken up. And I saw them later on after... in the Kingdom Hall, and they weren't angry at us. Everyone else was in the Kingdom Hall. There was press attention. There was some were outside the Kingdom Hall asking people for information, so we'd caused a lot of commotion.
I never understand this, you know, Jehovah's Witness tendency to be angry at the victim rather than the perpetrator. I've never understood it.
It doesn't make sense.
No sense.
And is it blatant? Do they say, because they seem to be angry, but they're not saying why?
I think it's easier to blame a victim because victims are vulnerable and they're generally nice, gentle people, kind. Mm. They're easier to be angry at. Perpetrators are difficult people. They're hard to challenge. They're very deceptive. They're cunning. And it's much harder to pin anything on them. Mm. And I think just from a human point of view, it's much easier to want the victim to go away because there's more chance that that's going to happen with a nice person than with a nasty person.
But does the anger come from the fact that these children then weren't... had sort of turned their back on Jehovah's Witnesses? Was that the anger?
Maybe, you know, bringing reproach upon Jehovah's name or the organisation's name, that may be the impetus.
Yeah.
I mean, in your situation, it's not even like you say you never said anything about the Witnesses. It's not even like you went out and made a fuss or a scene, unlike, say, a child abuse sex victim who grows up and goes to the police and they're the ones that have instigated the thing that turned the shit up.
Yeah.
It was the police that turned the shit up, wasn't
Absolutely.
It? You were just the fallout of the shit, and yet it was still somehow easier to blame you.
Yeah.
Maybe because you were still going along and she wasn't, so it...
Possibly. She was blocked by the police. I believe she went to Gloucester Congregation. Near Matt someone. I think she was there for a bit. But yeah, it's as you were saying a second ago, it's very easy to blame the victim. And also, cut the victim away.
The problem goes away
without, as you said, challenging the favourite ones within the congregation and making things hard for everyone.
And now that she's going back, I mean, that's going to be hard for them to challenge as well because, you know, she is a problem. She's
While she was in prison, she served quite a few years in prison. While she was in prison, they were actively visiting her.
How is this going to work? When she's in a congregation where there are children there, and presumably she'll have some kind of license. Well, she won't be out on license. If she completed a sentence?
She's completed her sentence, but she's on parole for another 5 years, I believe.
Right, so there's going to be conditions attached to that, presumably, where she can't be...
And because there was sexual abuse as well, you know, she's going to be under...
So she's not going to be allowed to be alone with any children, I suppose. But, you know, is she going to be in a congregation where these people don't really know about her?
I was wondering that. Do the people, I mean, will they know that she's
Will they do a service where they ask everybody to forgive her? Will they just ignore the fact that she's there, you know, and brush over it? Because I wouldn't want my children.
I know she's using a new identity, so maybe they're just going along with that. But you know, it was all in the press recently. Yeah. Who she is?
Yeah, it was.
She's got
without me going
you
out
forget.
With a big banner outside the Kingdom Hall saying you have a paedophile, child abusing nut job.
I mean, as you know, I've gone into Kingdom Halls and politely pointed out that this person's a paedophile and just to keep your children safe, because I think that's absolutely. I think that's a kindness.
And you can access that information through the police as well.
Well, absolutely,
yes, you can, and that's what I handed out when I went to my congregation Dewsbury. I only approached the people with children, and I gave them the article about the person, and I gave them a slip of paper that had the phone number on for the police that said, if you think your child is in contact with an abuser, you can phone this number to find out. So I was only giving them publicly, legally available information. And I wasn't like making a big scene. I was really discreetly approaching parents, and I'd be quite happy to do that again if I felt that people didn't know and children might be at risk. But I can't imagine she could go out and feel.
But they still, you know, whether you do it in that way or not, they still, the witnesses still feel that you are, you know, an apostate, and you're doing it to bring reproach upon their organisation.
Oh yeah, they don't thank you.
I just find it absolutely, you know, absolutely amazing.
I know. It is incredible. And the story, I mean, if you're interested in it, which it sounds a bit weird, but do read Chris's book, because it just is so incredibly insightful and you know, for a young chap at the time, because how old were you when you wrote that?
I was about 20.
Please
tell us what your book's called.
The book is called Child C. It's available through Amazon.
Right.
And it is, it's a good read. It's a hard read. It's a very, very hard read. And you kind of have to distance yourself and, you know, pretend it's a fictional read in your mind. But it's very hard to do when you live in the area and it's mentioned in local places and police officers that I used to work with and things. And so thinking, like, this is very, very real. And now I know the young man himself. So, but it is a hard read, but very, very good. So
thank you very much.
Yeah, and any more books on the scene coming up or anything?
There is a second book coming out, but it's just delayed because I'm very lazy at the moment. So.
Lazy, just ran a half marathon.
While we're recording this, I have cramp, by the way. So if you hear it doing weird noises, it's not.
Yeah. I just wanted to ask you, though, do you blame the Jehovah's Witnesses for Eunice or for not spotting it? Or
I can't say I blame them for it. But they made it very easy for her to do the abuse without it being picked up, and actively covered it up at times. Yeah, we have evidence of that. And
yet they were the ones in the end that...
There were one or two that stepped up to the mark, and you know, very decent people, and they reported it to the police. But the they went against the congregation's...
Protocols.
Yeah, they actually went... Because all the elders got together. I've heard this hearsay, but... Yeah. I have been told that all the elders got together and it was decided not to let, it was decided Victoria would go and do it herself. But a small group of Jehovah's Witnesses went against that. And
good. How can adults sit there and just...
How could you do that if you've ever seen a child in your life, not even had one?
I know.
How can you know even... a fraction of what you've just told us and make an active decision as an adult not to go to the police. Please shoot me if I ever make a decision like that. Every time anything is in the paper, you know, like with Victoria Climby, and it's this person, and I think, please God, don't ever let that be me. Please don't ever let that be me that misses that.
Yeah, like your James Bulger case, 32 people or something saw him on the way home. Nobody intervened. And you can kind of be forgiven on that, you know, say, you know, James Bulger walking home.
It's
one walk.
Yeah.
This was 15 years, you know, of being
attending
in that congregation.
Yeah.
It was too much for people, and they quite clearly were turning a blind eye.
Yeah.
One of the things that I know Steve wanted to ask was about anything that you wish you knew that could have helped.
Yeah, I was about to ask, you know, is there anything you wish you knew when you were younger that could have helped you and also could help, you know, younger ones who are undergoing similar kinds of abuse as well?
I wish I'd talked to people. Yeah, that is the one thing. I wish I'd... Yeah, there were the odd chances we did go to Morrison's to do the weekly shop and stuff. Yeah, there were chances I could have spoken to people. And I just wish I'd been brave enough or known to be brave enough to actually go ahead and do that. Yeah, I get 15 emails of roughly a week of people, young people who've been abused or are being abused at the moment, and I deal with it. Have to give it to the correct authorities or give them advice on what to do. And yeah, I'd always give that advice, just speak up. It's not an easy road. Going through that court case was possibly the hardest thing I've ever done. Witness intimidation, that was mad.
Did you watch her in court?
It was meant to be a curtain, but the curtain fell down.
As if it couldn't get any bloody worse, honestly.
But when I went to court, I had my arm in a bandage up from where I'd been punched to do with the court case. I should drop charges. We've been offered money. The court case is not an easy thing. So even if they don't want to go through the whole court case thing and, charge the person that's abused them or the family that's abused them, at least get out of it. They deserve better than that.
Mm. Have you had any professional help since? Because you're so lovely and you seem so at ease with talking about this.
I think, back when this was happening, the official guideline was don't do counselling while through the court case and things because it could affect the way you could almost forgive the person. So that has changed now. I know the team in Gloucestershire is called SARC. They get involved and they're a specialist team. But I had about 5 sessions counselling and then decided actually the easiest way is just to sort my own head out. It's not sorted out yet. We still go day to day with these problems and the health problems that have gone alongside all this abuse is, that's ridiculous.
It's been a rough year of it, haven't you?
It's been a rough year.
Also, I wanted to ask, as you're getting bombarded with emails from other people in that situation, is that not triggering to you? Do you not find that really difficult to deal with?
So I've got a set system. I do 1 hour a day of looking through my emails, and it's mostly through Facebook now, so it's a bit easier. It's not
manageable,
You can do it through a chat, and I use Skype as well. I don't do it on the weekends. I have to set up strategies to deal with it. And I've got a couple of other friends who are XJWs who have helped me. We bounce around messages and we're not just talking XJWs. I've got one from Scientology. He was abused within the Scientology and he's doing so good at the moment. But this is someone I've been following for about 4 years and we still chat most nights, couple of messages.
And it's worth mentioning, what field of work do you work in?
I work in the social work field.
Oh, my God, really? Like a busman's holiday.
But actually, I can see the other side now. And, a lot has changed. A lot has changed. We still make mistakes as a system, but
we will, and unfortunately, that's how we learn.
Yeah, absolutely. But there's a lot less serious case reviews now than there were in the 90s and the early 2000s.
Right. Given what you've been through, How is it that someone who is a past victim can be so empowered and strong? Now, where do you get your strength from nowadays?
I think it's a good question. Give me 1 second.
Is it justice? Does that help?
I don't think justice helps. I don't think justice really helps that much. Because by the time justice has happened, you've already come to terms with it. And actually, justice can get in the way of day-to-day life. I think I get my strength from making people happy. I really think that is my big thing. Whether it's just, as I said, I did a half marathon today, going along, talking to other people. I love chatting. That is my big thing. But one of the things that happened is, I missed out on a lot of my early teens, my late teens. And I think coming from a scenario where you've had no schooling at all, you don't know very little about the world, suddenly you're handed it all on a plate. And we live in an incredible world. It's absolutely amazing. And I have a list of things I want to do by the time I get old and die. And ticking those boxes off has kept me going. It could be everything from bungee jumping, done a parachute jump. That went wrong. So I'm not going to do another one of those. But I think my thirst for knowledge, my and want to see the world has really given my day-to-day strength. And, half of this is a cover. You get the weekdays, you really do get the weekdays. You get the days you feel crap. you get, you know, I've had to phone in a couple of times in the last couple of months, you know, I'm just not feeling it today. I don't want to come out of my bedroom. I don't want to turn the lights on. You know.
What about relationships with people, like, you know, meeting new friends now, because you were very, very isolated as a child, weren't you?
Yeah.
And now, you know, you've gotten, does that keep you going a bit with?
So I find it very hard to build up real friendships with people, especially with writing a book and things. You meet a lot of people. You meet a hell of a lot of people.
Is it hard to trust them?
Yes.
Yeah.
This is it. It's very hard to trust them, and it's very hard to build up a relationship with without thinking, what do they want?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And I'm so used to having stuff taken from me. It's very hard to trust people, but I'm getting better at that. I think a bit of that comes with age as well.
Yeah.
And you can only be burnt so many times before you learn.
Yeah, I think you're right, because being anybody in the public eye, when this all happened, anybody can be exploited, can't they?
Yeah.
Especially a young child who's already vulnerable himself.
Yeah.
Can be exploited. So you're right to be mistrustful.
Well, I got exploited by my real parents after.
Yeah, right.
They absolutely wrecked me because I wanted to buy their love. And, you know, I'm not going to lie, these books make a lot of money.
Mm.
And I think I blew about 35 grand on them in the course of 3 months. I look back now and I was actually buying their love.
Yeah. You weren't to know any different at that time.
No, absolutely. I'd have
done that as well, though, if I'd been in that position.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
There's no way you could think, oh, I'd know not to do that. You wouldn't. That's exactly what you'd do.
But looking back now, I'm like, that's a very nice BMW.
Yeah.
That could have been. Other cars are available. But yeah, I look back and I could have used that money so much, and they should, you know, they knew what they were doing.
And
my mum's passed now, my real mum, and so I can't be bitter about it, but definitely being exploited before.
Yeah, definitely. But I think you demonstrate that forgiving is the wrong word. You're tolerant, and you think you're mistrustful, but I think, you know, from when you and I met, I probably got a sense that you would be a little bit mistrustful, but, you know, you're very natural. You're very genuine with everything you say. You're so open and honest about things, which is an absolutely brilliant quality to have, isn't it?
Cool. Should we swap positions?
Are you?
I'm going to have to just sit on the floor.
You're going to have to roll around on the floor.
And you can get the bed. No, we're good.
Are you sure?
You need to. Used to roll.
We just need to explain to our two listeners that our two listeners that Chris is on a bed with myself and Heather.
Yeah.
in all true interviews should be conducted. So will you just mention your book again so that people can?
So my book is Child Sea by Christopher Spy, available on Amazon and Simon and Schuster websites.
Fantastic. I think I'm going to buy that and read it.
If you buy it, I can buy a BMW. Thank you.
Because you're on the bed with us, I'm going to invite you to stay for the rest of the podcast, because it'd be weird to ask you to leave the bedroom.
That'd be a bit weird. Be a bit weird.
So we've just got a couple of other things that we wanted to touch on before this brilliant podcast ends. And one of them, Steve, was your Black Atheist group I wanted to talk to you about. Tell us a bit about it.
Yeah, so yesterday I went to a meetup group, which is called London Black Atheists. And Terry and me were invited to kind of give a little speech, a little kind of lecture in a way, talking about our lives and our experiences in the Jehovah's Witnesses. The group is made up of, you know, various different people. They, on their meetup page, they say, despite the name Black, it is a group that welcomes all atheists. But the group was, I think, It's very important to have a group for Black people. It's very important to have a group to discuss very specific issues within the atheist community. And it was wonderful. So Terry and I went along.
So is that Black Terry or White Terry?
Terry's actually white. Funny to say that, because
White Terry went along. This is part of the whole reason why we're discussing it, isn't it?
Okay. I do have a burning question, Steve, which I think is probably on a few people's lips. It's based purely on my ignorance of everything to do with race and, you know, being a white woman in Britain. It's not really something I experienced, but I think I tried to get it across in the message very poorly. But as a white woman who classes herself as a non-racist and likes to be fair, I pretend that I don't see colour And I like to think that I don't treat anybody differently because of their colour. So to say that there's a black atheist group, for me, go, why? Why do you need a black atheist group?
Because that's a very...
you just hate the same as us.
Yeah, that's a very, very interesting question. And it we can get into like quite dangerous territory here. But one of the things that is very interesting is that a lot of people say that they are colorblind, you know, or they claim to be, or they wish they were colorblind. And in fact, that's not necessarily a positive thing, because sometimes it can be seen as negating a whole culture. You know, we are a very colorful, meaning human beings, very colorful, varied race of people. We've got different cultures, different colors, different ideas about the world. And instead of negating the fact that there are differences in order to be politically correct, it is an important thing to celebrate our different cultures. But one of the other questions that a lot of people have asked is, why is there a black atheist group? And it's very much similar to why there is a Black Lives Matter movement, or why there was in, you know, the 1960s, a black civil rights movement. And the reason is because there is not equality yet. And a second reason is also that there are a lot of groups out there, atheist groups, which are dominated by one particular kind of type of people. And it wouldn't really be appropriate to talk about, you know, certain issues surrounding black and African and Caribbean communities in those groups. So, I mean, for example, one of the lectures that they had in the Black Atheist group was defying fasting laws in Islamic North Africa. And can you imagine?
Which is a problem I have a lot in my life, I'll be honest with you.
Can you imagine a group where 99.99% of the people are not black or of North African origin, and then having a discussion about this? It wouldn't affect most people. Yes, there are kind of topics which are about Africa that have become global issues that different activists have fought against, like, you know, FGM, female genital mutilation. But our cultures, human cultures, are much more complex than that one issue. And it is a good thing for people to be able to discuss those issues in a group of people who really understand them. So, yeah, it's the idea is not to be racist or exclusionary. And in fact, half of the people at the group were not black. All of the groups that I'm a member of, we have kind of cross group, you know, meetups where we try to meet with each other and try to talk about issues which are similar, which are different. And it's always very inclusionary rather than exclusive.
Yeah, one of the points we were talking about that I thought was, if you sort of flipped the coin and had a white atheist group, does sound racist, and possibly because it speaks to centuries white privilege is why it sounds, and also because historically white groups have meant white only, haven't they, like apartheid type, whereas a black group doesn't, you're not saying black only. It's not like a male-only golf club, which would be, although I suppose I could be condemned on this front, because I do run a women's Facebook group, and we don't let men in.
Oh.
It is a women only, and that's because I hate men. No, it's not!
Well, there's a difference.
I want to say terrible, terrible things about them behind all your back.
No chocolate for you.
No.
There's big difference between being an exclusive group and being a group that tackles or talks about specific issues, but allows everyone to be part of that group. Because there are very specific issues, as I mentioned before, that only affect certain groups of people. And it's not to say that every single black person or every single black atheist would be interested in attending such a group. But the group's critics said was, you know, if there were a gay atheist group, that would be terrible. And if there were a female atheist group, that would be terrible. There are those groups. Those groups exist too. There's a gay atheist group, and it's called London LGBT Humanists.
But I get that. I get that there's a gay one makes sense to me.
Really?
Yeah.
But is there a gay black atheist group for people who are 6 foot two?
I think that would be
glasses?
Quite niche. There probably would be.
You'd be the only one.
Yeah, well, this is what I was
You live in London.
Yeah.
But one of the interesting things is that for social and historical reasons, people of Afro-Caribbean ancestry tend to be very religious. And the default position in Afro-Caribbean cultures is that religion is something which you should respect. And that's not always the case. And there are many, many, many cases of atheists who are Afro-Caribbean being shunned by their family, which to us, it seems a normal thing to be shunned by your family, you know, as ex-Jehovah's Witnesses. But it's not really a very common thing to happen through society. And there are other groups such as, you know, ex-Muslims who experience exactly the same thing. And sometimes it's nice to be able to go to a group where people just get you. People understand.
Without having to say the backstory. Yeah. Are you not to explain that there's a chocolate sampling going on here?
I bought
Heather three posh, what I thought were posh chocolates, and the first one that's been sampled is apparently disgusting.
Okay, so we'll go through the flavours.
Okay.
Okay, so they're by a company called Doisy and Dan, which are very nice. They're very Cheltenham.
Yeah.
So we have quinoa, smoked tea and vanilla.
Quinoa.
The second one is lemon, poppy seed and baobab.
Yeah.
And then the third one is date and Himalayan pink salt.
Chocolate. It's all chocolate.
And apparently I've bought a pile of crap.
No, it's chocolate.
Anyway.
I'm also joining you on the chocolate.
You have to come and join us in the bedroom, Steve. Are you up for that?
But you have to remember this is a one man, two women club.
Scenario.
Which is
some chocolate called Bunter Vielfalt from Germany. Bunter Vielfalt Neu Ritter. Knusper tortilla chips mit Knuppermais. I have no idea what it is.
I love them. Knuppermais are my favourite.
I'm eating it right now.
Blimey.
It's kind of in the club then, really. Just remotely. Yeah.
He can't be in every club.
No, you can't. I think he is.
So just going back to what I was saying, because I think I struggle with the kind of relating colour of skin to culture or... I mean, I could obviously there are certain ways people look that you assume a certain culture that goes in with that. Is this more about, because it isn't that, surely it's not that your skin is black. It's your culture that makes the atheist group
exactly. It's the culture.
Others.
It's the culture of the way religion is treated in many African and Caribbean cultures, sub-Saharan African and Caribbean cultures. So there are very specific experiences that Afro-Caribbean people do have that need to be addressed. And culture, we're not saying that all Afro-Caribbean culture is exactly the same, but there are shared experiences that certain people have, which other groups of people don't have. And one of the critics said, oh, it's segregation. It's not segregation at all. By no means is it.
Quite
yeah, exactly.
There.
I mean, there were many, many people. I think it was probably about half of the people not of African, Afro-Caribbean descent. And it's only segregation. Segregation and racism are things which are institutionalized. They're institutionalized in society. It's not something that you do. It's not an action that you take. It's about the institution of it, which enables certain people to have privilege and certain people to lack it. That's what those two terms mean. And a lot of people don't really understand what racism means. They think that it means, you know, being an individual being mean to another individual because of their race. That's not what racism is at all. Racism causes that racial prejudice to happen, but that's not what it is itself.
I actually had this conversation with Gordon recently, who will hate me after saying this, but I have a cousin in America, I may have mentioned this before, who is...
American,
black American, and lives in Texas in a very, from what I gather, it's a widely black, mostly black community where she lives, but obviously Texas is very, very large, and she encounters all sorts of things. The racism that's going on over there at the moment, and the guns, and the police brutality, the argument that Gordon and I were having is, For example, it was around the time that there was a chap in a car who was pulling out his ID and was shot 4 times or something by a cop. And I was saying to Gordon, these are racist attacks. And he's saying, no, that cop did not go out there and say, I hate blacks, I'm going to shoot them. I said, no, but that's still a racism issue, regardless of whether he was forcibly...
He wasn't consciously thinking that. But his subconscious was telling him, this man in this car is more dangerous and I've got to shoot him.
There's still that stigma. It's a stigma.
A lot of people, you know, when you say that what they did was racist, they get very defensive and say, oh, no, I'm not racist. It shouldn't be taken as of course, it should be a negative thing, but it shouldn't be taken as a personal attack on someone's character. It should be taken as, I didn't realize that what I was doing was problematic to that particular individual or that particular group of people, and apologize for it and try to change yourself, because racism is something, racism, just like sexism and homophobia, can be things that are, you know, ingrained into us from a very early age, and they become part of who we are in society.
I was speaking to Karen Larby today about this topic, and she said, you're like treading on eggs all the time, basically. She said, I kind of fear for my relationships with people at work and colleagues and people that I know, because if you post the wrong thing and it gets taken the wrong way. And I said, it just must be utterly exhausting. And she went, yeah, it is exhausting.
I have, I just got back from Africa. We went to Zanzibar, and in the capital of Zanzibar, in Stone Town, we spent 2 days there. And we had a wonderful tour by a local African man who showed us the 45 mosques that are in this small town. You've got children running around, by the way, just as a sideline, with no shoes on, torn clothes. And there are 45 mosques in this tiny little town. Anyway, that's a side point. There is an Anglican church, and there was a Catholic church, or there was a Church of England or something random.
Random Christian.
And they're side by side next to the mosques. And this tour guide made a point of saying, look, they're friends. And he said, he stood me in a position. He said, take a picture here, and you can see the mosque and the church next to each other. He said, look, they're friends. So that, you know, but still, you could, the Muslim, it was 90% Muslim there, and it's 10% Christian. Mm. The Muslims there are still very strong in their ways, in their Muslim, you know. Yeah. I felt even as an atheist, and I kind of felt a bit oppressed, but I did cover myself fully. My knees and my shoulders, and at one point my head, because I wanted to respect, you know, their beliefs and things. I'm walking around thinking, for God's sake, I shouldn't have to do this. But nobody forced me to do that. I wanted to do that.
Yeah.
I felt very uncomfortable, very vulnerable, and I felt for the first time in my life as a white person.
A minority.
I felt a minority, yeah.
And that's interesting, because two people can live in the same house and have a completely different experience. As Chris's life has just... You know, there were some children that weren't abused at all and some that were in the same household. So you might get one child going, oh, no, she's fine. I don't know what your problem with her is. And the other kid going, no, you can't. You see what's happening. And so for one person to say that another person's not experiencing negativity or oppression or racism, it's so easy to say if it didn't happen to you. It's like saying cancer doesn't exist because I haven't got it. It's validating to tell somebody else
and
what their experience is, and to blame the victim
and
again.
That's the thing. If you are not a woman, you do not know what, you know, women go through every day. Gay or trans, you do not know. If you're not black, you don't know. So I'm not saying, you know, or if you don't know, you should shut up. But be more curious and ask, rather than assuming that, oh, your experience is exactly the same as my experience. It's very important to be open-minded and to ask people what their experience is, rather than just assuming that they're wrong. And
not to insist that their experience isn't happening because you didn't see it. Another good example is that if you go into a supermarket with someone who's not a Jehovah's Witness, and there's a guy on the till who's a witness and he's shunning you, the person you won't notice. Because it's so subtle, but you'll know. You'll totally know that shit. And when you come out, you say, did you see what that fella did? He didn't speak to me at all. And she'll be like, well, he didn't speak to me. He's just a cashier. And it's easy to, you're being oversensitive. You're making a big deal about it. But it doesn't matter if the other person hasn't noticed your experience. It might still have happened. So as you say, it's not to say shut up, but it's to say, please believe me. If I'm telling you this is happening, I'm not lying or making it up. Please accept that even though you didn't see it, or experience it, it might still have happened to me.
Yeah, I hold my hands up to being, like I say, I'm ignorant, and that I'm all consumed in the rest of my life, and I want to take more time to understand this particular issue. But yeah, I do that. I kind of think, well, I don't see it. No, I'm not receiving it. That's why.
And that's kind of understandable, because you can't understand the whole world, can you? But I suppose the point you're making is don't blame the victim, and don't negate their experience. Yeah. It might be that you've not seen it and you can't be expected to see things that don't happen to you, but don't invalidate someone else's
another
experience.
Thing is that even if you are in a particular group, often you can live your life without noticing something. So, for example, for a long while, I didn't realize, you know, that I had experienced racism before, because I didn't class it as racism. And one of the reasons is because the kind of school that I went to and the kind of accent I have, the way I dress, I wasn't getting as much attention as someone who dresses in a hoodie and walks down the road and speaks like, you know, with a Southlandan accent. So long time ago, I used to say racism, yeah, maybe it exists, but not in London. And then I began to actually experience it myself, and I realized I was actually wrong. And the reasons I wasn't experiencing it were because of other reasons. Not just because of not being black, but because of my education, because of my class, because of various other reasons. So, yeah.
Yeah, Karen said that she likened her waking up in The Witnesses as a similar thing to waking up to racism. And I kind of get that. Yeah. Mm. The only other thing I wanted to discuss was the group Faith to Faithless. Do you have Faith to Faithless? They have a great website, don't they?
Yeah, we've had a few meetups, kind of the XJW meetup and the Faith to Faith group. We've had a few meetups with them a few months. Amazing group, amazing guy Imtiaz, who I met a few weeks ago. I did the tour of the British Museum, and we had a good few ex-Jehovah's Witnesses, but also we were joined by some ex-ultra-Orthodox Jews and an ex-Catholic, and then we went to the pub and we had a chat, and some of the ex-Muslims joined us, and it was amazing. It was really good. Yeah,
it really was. So I would urge people to check out that website, because when you hover over the links, they've got like an X virtually every high control group you can mention, and the idea is that everyone shares their experiences, because actually that's how my dad woke up. We met some guy that was coming out of some other religion, and this other guy was questioning everything about what if they're right, what if God's going to destroy me, what's going to happen to my family. And my dad was thinking, hey, I'm thinking all those same questions, but he's clearly the wrong religion, whereas I'm the right one. And then he was thinking, well, maybe he's thinking that about me. And then that helps you wake up. We might talk about them a bit more on another podcast, I think, because it probably merits a lot more investigation. But it is a great website, faithtofaithless.com.
Sorry, can we put a link up to Steve's Black Atheist group as well?
Yeah, do you want a link to our Black Atheist group?
That would be a good idea, yeah.
Fantastic. So if you send me that information.
One last thing I wanted to mention was that in the second week of November, so the 12th of November, there's going to be a tour that I'm organising of the Natural History Museum. So it's a tour whereby we talk about evolution, and we talk about the evidence for evolution, and we talk about evolution and how it influences all of the different sciences. And there's a new exhibition as well, which has lots of skeletons and skulls of some of the ancient hominids. So, please check out the link, which will be there and on the website, and come along. The more the merrier.
Fantastic. And anybody else got any other business?
No, I think I'm all talked out.
Just before we finish, Chris, can I ask you where you sit on the God atheism spectrum?
I'm an atheist.
Are you? Yeah, I am.
Really, Louise?
You never say.
Because rumour has it you are really religious.
Well, I do like a Catholic mass, as it happens.
Yes.
As it turns out. There's just one other thing I wanted to mention, and this is from Rosie King on the UK group, and she gave an absolutely crap. cracking scriptural response to someone. Now, I think the Bible's about as valid as a Dr. Seuss book, personally. But if you're going to go there, this is brilliant. I'm just going to read out a post, and it might be that we revisit this again. She says, "I think I gave my friend a bit of cognitive dissonance yesterday. She's been disfellowshipped since she was 17. She's been going to meetings for a few weeks because she misses her family. She had a lot of issues with her family, and they've made themselves unavailable to her, particularly since this convention that's just happened. So yesterday, Rosie says, I went round and she got her Bible out and I just casually showed her 1 Timothy 5:8 and she went kind of quiet and then sent it to her dad and asked him what he thought about it and he hasn't replied. But she was very unsure why the Bible says, this is brilliant, a man who doesn't take care of his family is worse than a man without faith. But obviously Jehovah's Witnesses have been actively shunning this girl. And I thought, what a brilliant scripture to use for people that are shunning. So if you are in that position where you're being shunned and you want to challenge it, 1 Timothy 5:8. Just thought that was a really, really powerful scripture to use if you're going to reason with shunning witnesses.
I need to look that up now.
Yeah, a man who doesn't take care of his family is worse than a man without faith. And so she said, this particular family had left this girl to sleep in a car when she had nowhere to stay when she was pregnant. So they've been pretty high-end shunners. So she says, it got my friend thinking. And obviously, she put it to her dad, who's a witness, and he didn't reply. So I just thought that was really great. Yeah, a really great use of the Bible if you're gonna have to resort to it.
I wonder how many people have done that.
I know, that's a really good one. And really so if this girl does wake up, there might be a story that we can revisit there. But anyway, thank you so much, Chris. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
Steve, thank you very much. say goodbye to our two listeners. Say goodbye, Heather.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to our show, and remember to share the love and spread the word about JW Podcast.